And of course, the story surrounding the death of Jim Morrison widespread. So many different stories, myths, conspiracy stories. We'll talk about a few of them with Robbie Krieger, Ray Manzarek, Gary Patterson with us. Gary will be with us throughout the night tonight. And we're also going to open up the phone lines a little earlier, too, and intersperse you along with Ray and Robbie as well. Ray's going to be with us for 1/2 hour more. Then he's got to get rolling here, and then Robbie will stick around for a bit. I'm George Norrie. Back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And jump in anytime you want here, Gary. We're with Robbie Krieger, Ray Manzarek. So there was no autopsy performed. Apparently, French law says that, the medical examiner claimed to have found no evidence of foul play, and nobody really saw the body, at least the people that you felt comfortable with. Ray, at this point now, I mean, these stories about Jim Morrison still alive, I mean, are they preposterous stories?
Yes.
Well, you know what it is? It's the Dionysian impulse. Morrison represents a modern incarnation, 20th century version of the Greek god Dionysus, who was the dying and resurrecting god. He was the god of the green earth, the god of wildness, the god of sexuality, the god of the fecund powers of the earth, the green growth rising again in the springtime. That's what Jim Morrison is, a dying and resurrecting god. Except he's not a god, he's just a guy. But that impulse, and the Greek mythology was human impulses applied to what they called the gods, but they were all human impulses, and it's an impulse to want that dying, resurrecting, that thing. He's not dead. He's not dead. No. He staged his own death to get away from all the problems of rock and roll, and he just wanted to be a poet and be free and just be left alone so he could write his poetry.
Well, sounds good, right?
Yeah, well, that's if you want to believe it, God bless. I'm not gonna
well,
say
people want him to be alive. They don't want to think that it's over.
He died.
27 years old,
died in a bathtub,
gone, and same with Elvis. They always think Elvis is still alive.
Tupac Shakur is still alive.
I still hear Kennedy's still alive, and he's in a vegetative state.
Yeah.
Remember that?
That's right. He'll come through one day. Well, people want to believe that. I mean, it's like you don't want your heroes to die. My God, Janis and Jimmy and Tupac and Jim Morrison. Kurt Cobain, I guess everybody knows he's dead. Stuck the gun in his mouth and pulled the trigger.
Yeah.
A shotgun. No denying that. But Jim with that sealed coffin, and it was full. Only it wasn't for that sealed coffin, I think everything would, yay, he's gone. God rest his soul.
So why don't they exhume the coffin?
Only his mother and father can do that.
They can only do that.
Only his parents. We can't do that.
And the parents still alive?
The admiral is still alive.
Yeah, father.
Yeah, his Clara is has passed on.
Well, I still get calls every once in a while. As a matter of fact, there's some guy on the West Coast who claims to be Jim Morrison. I mean, they're all over the place.
Just one?
How many are out there, Gary?
Well, I tell you, I've heard there's one in Louisiana. I heard there's one in southern Florida. And I know that Ray's probably heard plenty of stories about people claiming to be Morrison. I'd like him to tell the story about getting a message from the Outback in Australia.
Right.
What happened?
Well, right. This is a great story. I get a letter from Australia. I know. You can just imagine the accent. I know where Jim Morrison is, Ray. He's in the outback. He's got a broken leg. Broken leg, Mike. Send me $1,500 and I'll go and get him. Well, go get him, man. Send me $1,500.
And of course, you FedEx the check.
Oh, immediately, yeah. And and that guy just downed it all on Foster's Lager. Have a beer.
Well, don't you think that one of the problems, and it's not really a problem, but it's the idea need to believe that when Jim died and Pamela leased the grave for 30 years, and the idea was that somewhere on July 7th or July 8th, that the body would be exhumed originally because when the lease ran out. I know that one of the most important things is when the wall
She was just
down.
Cheap, that's all.
Yeah, and when the wall came down in the 1990s, you had Eastern Europeans who could finally make a journey to Paris and visit Morrison's grave, and the riots broke out, and the graffiti on the graves. The French were not very intent on letting him stay for a while, and I was just curious. think the idea of that 30-year lease being up and the coffin being brought up and maybe Jim starting the L.A. tour, you know, in 2001, whatever, right? Do you think that might have been something that people wanted some closure by finally opening the grave and determining if he was there?
That's disgusting, man.
Yeah, you know what?
That's absolutely disgusting. I'm not even going to bother answering a question of would bring the grave, the coffin
out of the grave, open the coffin,
and there's the rotted, faded body. Hey, yuck. That's disgusting.
Look,
if the guy, first of all, if the guy staged his own death, leave him alone. You know, obviously, he doesn't want to be bothered. He hasn't called me in 35 years.
And I think
I don't
he
know. Has he talked to you, Robbie?
I think he would have called one of you.
Somebody, or we'd have heard about some guy who's remarkably like Jim Morrison on stage in Africa in a little club in Mombasa. Mombasa. But, you know, it's ridiculous. He's
gone.
Well,
there was talk of moving Jim, the casket, because the lease had run out, you know.
Uh-huh.
And then somebody in the government in Paris finally realized that Jim Morrison is the number three tourist attraction in Paris.
They want him there.
Oh,
right?
Yeah. He's not going anywhere, believe me.
Moment, please. No. I don't think we will move him because there's the Mona Lisa, Eiffel Tower, the Pompidou Museum. And the Jim Morris in the gym. So Jim, I think, is number four. So, my God, for all the young people, we cannot move him. We will keep him. We want to keep him. And the Admiral and Mrs. Admiral said that they would take care of the graffiti, the cleanup. So there's like a weekly cleanup at Père Lachaise.
Right, and there's a full-time guards now.
This little old Frenchman. He's like, no, don't go there. You cannot.
No shitting on the grave.
Don't do that. No touching. Don't leave things. Is that a joint? Don't put a joint there. No, don't pour the wine. Come on.
In Corson, she died 3 years later, didn't she?
1 year later, I think, wasn't it?
I don't know.
Maybe two. Yeah,
I'm not at liberty on this show to discuss Pamela Curson's death, only that she was Jim Morrison's number one love. He always loved her. Right. She was a beautiful person,
a good person,
and they were a rock and roll Romeo and Juliet.
They were. Exactly.
Romeo and Juliet of rock and roll, Jim Morrison and Pam Morrison. They were beautiful people. She loved him dearly, and he loved her madly.
Well said, and enough said of that.
Yeah.
And then he dies. And the myth continues, and so we can at least put that to an end tonight, that two of the members of the Doors say he's gone.
Wait a minute. I'm just saying I haven't
there
talked
a chance.
To Jim Morrison in 35 years, man, but he's dead and gone.
He's
course,
gone. He's gone. Did you have doubts for a while?
Not the lifestyle he was living. No, I can't say that I had doubts when Sidon said we buried a sealed coffin. I thought, oh, God, no, a sealed coffin. But I thought that Jim was was over the edge, had gone over the edge. Actually, it was Jimbo who had gone over
abusing himself all the time.
Although, you know, I always thought that he'd be one of those guys who, you know, drinks two bottles of whiskey a day and then lives till 85.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
But
a George Byrne cigar type.
Yeah, yeah, but that didn't happen.
Well, there was a lot of them dying at 27. Rock and rollers die at 27.
It's amazing, Gary. Yeah. Remember that? You've told us about that. This incredible age.
Yeah, it starts at Robert Johnson and works his way up through Kurt Cobain. I'm sure there's some after that, but there's at least 16 major rockers who died at the age of 27.
And by the way, Heath Ledger, who just died, was 28. He came. He just passed it.
Yeah.
He came close. I think Ray tells a great story about the numerology behind 27.
Well, 7 and 2 adds up to a 9. Numerologically, there's a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. That's all the numbers there are. 10 is a 1. 11 is a 2. 12. So you can take your birthday and reduce it all, your date, the day, the year, all of that month, you reduce it all down to a single digit. And 7 and 2, 2 and 7 is 9, and that's it. That's the end number. That is the end point. That's the end or a new beginning. And all of these people were not able to make a new beginning. They were genius artists, young people. 27 is young. You're a young person.
That's
when you're
a baby.
Young. You're not. I don't. You don't even think of yourself as an adult. I didn't think of myself as an adult at 27. You're kids. You still think you're a kid. These people were not able to make that leap into the next go around numerologically, in which they begin to accept responsibility for their own actions.
Why did you two continued to move on? How come this didn't affect you two?
It did, but we were afraid to die. He wasn't.
You had some more control.
I guess we were lucky. We were lucky. We were lucky. Now, Jim, you know, Jim was, he was a genius, and he was the greatest guy in the world, but he had problems, you know. He was cracked, man. You know, he had...
The shaman.
Yeah, it wasn't like he didn't just live every day like you and I, where you can kind of relax and, you know, hang out, think about nothing for a while.
Right, right.
You know, 24 hours, his mind was going,
constantly.
Going. What happens when you die? You know.
Yeah. And the intensity with which he lived his life, the experiences were so intense for him. On stage, it was intense. Off stage, it was intensity, and it was like, Jim, calm down. Can you relax? I can't relax, man. This, you never know when this could be your last performance. You never know when this could be your last day on earth. So you got to live it full of intensity. And he crammed into those 27 years. You know, I can't be too sorry, because he was like 67 years old when he died. He had lived an intense, happy, full, robust life.
And you can't say that about everybody.
You can't say that about me and Robbie. We're just going along here, you know. Hey, you know, we're still married. Robbie, what is this, you're 38?
Pretty close to that.
37, 38 years of marriage?
Well, 1973.
Oh, I thought you got married right after Dorothy and I did. Dorothy and I got married in 67, so yeah. We just celebrated our
40th. Do you two still play together as Writers in the Storm now? You still?
We do.
Yeah. Going all over the country or just in L.A.?
All over the world. We're going to Mexico in 2 weeks from now for a tour of Mexico and South America.
Then we're going to go to South America.
So you don't stop? You still?
Well, of course you stop. You know, I mean, we play. We go out for 2 weeks. South America, maybe it'll be 3 weeks, but that's all we do.
Yeah, but with Jim, it was like, you know, he would play the gig, okay? And then we would play the gig. Ray and John and I would go to sleep or go home or, you know, hang out a little bit. He would have to go party. He'd have to find some people to go and cause some trouble with.
Went all night long, too.
All night long.
No,
and,
we,
you know, he didn't like to sleep because it was a waste of time.
We go home, you know. Yeah. We're going to go home after we go to Mexico
say,
for 2 weeks and go home.
Yeah, you know, Jim used to say that, you know, you guys, to you guys, man, this is just a job, you know, but to me, it's my whole life. You know, I never stop thinking about the group, you know. He says, I'm always either writing songs or, you know, remember when he said that?
No.
Well, he did.
I would have said that.
He wanted to. He wanted a bigger cut of the action, I think.
Yeah, that's why he was saying it.
How would Jim Morrison have reacted in this world of iPods and YouTube and internet and CDs everywhere?
He wasn't a techie kind of guy.
Yeah.
No. He would let somebody else do it.
Handle
for him.
All that.
Yeah, yeah.
Was he a businessman?
He would never. He'd hate iPhones because he wouldn't want people to be able to get a hold of him.
Yeah.
Anytime, you know.
He wrote with pen and paper. Pencil and paper. He was a writer.
He was a poet.
You know, he would not text message. He was writing in a book. He was always writing poems. The guy wrote a lot of poetry. Wrote a lot of poetry in Paris. And someday, I'm hoping that the Cursons will allow it to be published. It's all in the hands of Pamela's mother and father.
Sure.
So we're hoping that someday we'll be able to read Jim Morrison's poetry from Paris.
Did he have a savvy business mind at all?
Well, he said, let's split all the money four ways. That way we won't ever fight.
Oh,
about my
right
song,
about
your song, yeah. My song. I want to do my song. I don't get to do my songs. Instead, it's like we just split. He said, it's only four-way split.
It was a full partnership.
Yeah.
He was a savvy businessman, really. He was.
Let's take some calls. Let's go to our wild card line. You're on Coast to Coast with us. You're on with Ray Manzarek and Robbie Krieger and Gary Patterson back there. Hi there.
How you doing? This is Jason from Phoenix.
Hey, Jason. Go ahead with your question.
Well, I just want to say thanks to Robbie and Ray for great years of music with the Doors.
All right. You're 40 welcome. Years this year.
You guys had a major impact on my life. Taught me how to think for myself.
Good. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for doing that, man.
You know, the years of hold up in my room and my stepfather going, when are you coming out? When are you coming out? That damn Jim Morrison again. I'm like, I'll be out in a minute.
Yeah.
My question is, and I've read some stuff, interviews that you did, Ray, pertaining to Cliff Morrison. What do you think about him?
I know nothing about him.
You know nothing about Cliff Morrison?
Well, I know that he claims to be Jim Morrison's illegitimate son. I mean, that's all I know, you know. What do I know? Who's the mother?
I'm not at liberty to say.
Whoa!
I'm,
are you Cliff?
No, I'm not Cliff.
Okay, but you're not at liberty to say who the mother is. You're not at liberty? Are you part of the cabal, of the Cliff Morrison cabal?
I wouldn't call myself that, no.
Okay,
is he
Jim Morrison's illegitimate son?
Do I believe that?
Yeah.
I cannot speak for anybody else, but do
well,
I
of course,
believe
you
that?
Believe that.
It's possible. Anything is possible.
And yeah, anything is possible. I personally don't believe it. So
you know, but
well, you know what? I told Cliff years ago to get a DNA test, and then there would be no question about
right.
it.
Right, and even to this day, with everybody coming in, coming out of lives, saying that they may or may not be his offspring, it has never been proven.
No, and you know what? My theory is that Jim was sterile. Because you know what? Mm. If he wasn't sterile, there'd be 8 million Jim Morrison kids. I mean, come on. Who? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. He was squirting around all over the place.
And there were so many of these gals in those days who specialized in having kids by rock and rollers. And believe me, they all had
Yeah, you
a
might
chance.
Be right about that, Robbie.
You know, my bet goes with the Alan Los Angeles. Did you ever meet the kid that called himself Alan Los Angeles?
No.
Boy, he was blonde, but he sure did look like Jim. He just had a great Jim Morrison.
And did he claim to be?
Yeah, but he didn't know who his mother was. Ah. He thought maybe it was Patricia Keneally or somebody. And I said, I don't think so. And, you know, no, you're not, you know. I said, look, you're such a good-looking guy. Why do the Jim Morrison, I'm his illegitimate son shtick? Just go ahead and write your own poetry and sing your songs. Look at you. You're so handsome.
They want the money, Raymond.
Well,
you know. No, they want to.
They want to jump in without doing the work. I'm his illegitimate son. Put me as a lead singer of the Doors. I don't think so.
Are the old songs still selling? Are they still out there?
They seem to be doing okay.
Royalties go on forever?
Yeah. Royalties go on for the rest of my life and the rest of our kids' lives, that's for sure. Yeah, songs still sell, of course, yeah.
That is something.
CDs are out there, man. The CDs are available.
You know, because
available
of the
for download.
Internet now, they don't sell as well as they used to, but, you know.
Who's your favorite group or artist, Robbie?
My favorite group or artist, other than the Doors?
Other than the Doors.
Golly gee, that's a good question. I mean, you know, I like jazz, you know, jazz music, all the jazz guitar players, John Scofield, Larry Carlton, guys like that.
How about you, Ray?
Beck, Blur, Bjork, and the Chemical Brothers.
Uh-huh. One more call, then we'll take our break. Let's go to our West of the Rockies line. You're on the air. Hi there. Hello.
Well, so much for that.
Hello.
There you go. Go ahead.
Hello.
Hi. Good evening, man. This is Narcisa. I'm calling from Seattle, and this is a mind-blowing honor. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Ray Mundo, I just wanted to share that I loved the book, The Poet in Exile.
Hey, good for you.
And inside the front cover is a autograph of Robbie from a NAMM show that my husband got for me back in L.A.
Great.
So that's kind of cool to sit in this book. And but anyhow, so I just want to
Before you do that, let me get another. I have another book out. It's called Snake Moon. It's the story of a supernatural sexual attraction set in the American Civil War.
That sounds like a coast-to-coast
program. A ghost story.
We'll be back in a moment. Don't go away. Well, thanks to Ray Manzarek. He's got an early plane flight tomorrow, so he has skedaddled. Robbie Krieger, of course, the legendary Doors guitarist, is with us. Gary Patterson and your phone calls. So we'll be back with all of that in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Hey, you might recall, remember about a year ago I told you about this incredible dream I had where I saw three tornadoes were zooming in on the Los Angeles area? It was really strange. Tonight, a tornado touched down near the Los Angeles area. Now that's weird. Robbie, at any time, did Jim talk about faking his death or anything like that? Did he kid around like that?
No, not that I remember. But, like, you know, like Ray said, if there was ever a guy that would do something like
he'd be the one.
Yeah, he loved to do stuff like that, you know. In fact, my wife just told me a story the other day, Lynn. She was with Jim one day, and Jim was kind of courting her, you know, taking her out and stuff. And meanwhile, he had a girlfriend that he lived with, Pam.
That's Jim, right?
Yeah. So he invites my wife, Lynn, over there. This is before she was my wife.
Right, of course.
And she goes, well, who's this bitch, you know? And he goes, wait a minute. You know, so there's a big fight. And so Lynn storms out of the place. I never want to talk to you again, you know. So what does Jim do? He runs after her. He goes, wait, don't leave, don't leave. She doesn't mean anything to me, you know. And then this car comes speeding down the street. Jim jumps onto the hood of this guy's car, like you'd see in the movie or something.
Yeah.
Scared the hell out of Lynn. And after that, she said, that was it. I knew he was nuts.
She started dating someone a little more stable.
Huh? I mean, he really could have been killed, you know, doing something like that.
God. Did you ever see him get into fights with other people?
Yeah.
He did that a lot. Right?
Yeah. The funny thing about Jim was he used to like to get beat up.
He used to like to get beat up. He was a masochist.
I mean, that's what it seemed like to me. I remember one time we were eating dinner in some restaurant, and there were some jarheads sitting next to us, and we made some snide remarks, which was very stupid of us, actually. But so they kind of followed us out after
we left. As Marines should have.
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
I was in the Navy. I got to side with the Marines now, Robbie.
And so one of them grabs Jim and he's banging his head against the window. And Jim's got this smile on his face. And he's
like,
pain. Yeah. He says, just call the police, you know.
Amazing. Now, did the Marines know it was Morrison?
No, I mean, this is before we were anything.
Oh, way before.
Yeah,
okay.
This was before and anybody knew who we were.
In that case, beat him up.
Right? Yeah.
Robbie, I've got a question. We were talking about...
He liked pain, you know. It was kind of reality to him or something, you know.
Unbelievable.
He wasn't a masochist by any means.
All right, go ahead, Gary.
Yeah. Robbie, I got a question. There's lots of stuff that's written by the Doors or about the Doors. And, I mean, you guys are the original source, and you know this. But I remember reading somewhere that it was in 1967, maybe at the Winterland, and the source said that Jim had come up with an idea that maybe he should fake his death to sell records faster. Sort of like the Johnny Ace idea that sometimes dead rock stars sell records. What do you know of that? Is that true, or is that just...
Now, what did the Winterland have to do with this?
I have no idea. Something supposedly at the Winterland was when he approached the idea or whatever.
Who knows? He may have said something like that, but I'm sure he wasn't serious about it.
So if he called you tomorrow, you'd be in shock.
Yeah. Yeah, I would think, I would say, why? What the hell did you wait 35 years?
Yeah, thanks a lot.
Yeah.
First time caller line, you're on the air with us. Hi there. Welcome to the show. Hi.
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead, please.
Oh, hi. I'm Shannon Wuhan from La Cañada.
Hello.
I'm only 16.
Right. La Cañada.
Go ahead, hon.
Okay, well, this is for Robbie. I just wanted to know how it was, like, knowing that you would never be able to, like, perform with Jim again, like, after you knew he died, he was to pass away.
Well, how do you think it was? It was terrible. It's like the worst thing that could have happened. You know, when something like that happens, it's like your whole world is tipped on its end, you know. So, I was, like, in a
shock.
Yeah, totally.
Absolutely.
You know, it's like a member of your family dying, you know.
How long did you and the rest of the group not play again after the Morrison death?
Probably a year or so.
A year or so. They started,
you know, we had been working on some new songs when Jim was in Paris. So we, you know, expecting Jim to be back at some point.
Sure.
And so we said, well, you know, look, we can either hide our heads in the sand and just never play again, or we can, you know, we could still be the Doors. And we decided we would. So, you know, we did go on for two more albums after Jim died. And there was some pretty damn good stuff on those records.
He would have loved being part of that.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You know, it's we were writing stuff, you know, expecting that he would be singing it.
Gary, next hour I want to talk with you about so many young performers and stars who have passed on. Lots of them, of course, abusing their lives, I guess. And they get your take on that, all right?
Sure. Be wonderful.
Back to the phones we go. We'll go to our wild card line. You're on the air with us on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Robbie.
Yeah.
Hey, man, I saw you in Boise, Idaho. It's Rick from the big city, Boise, Idaho.
All right.
Man, I was front stage with my son.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, he was into The Cure.
Oh, yeah.
So he knew the lead singer, who is, help me.
Well, that at that time it would be Ian Astbury, right?
Yeah, who played for you guys. My son got, you dropped your pick, and Ian hands the pick to my son. Was that too cool?
Must have been,
you know,
for
I
your
have
son,
a ticket,
yeah.
I pinched from my sister. Well, I gave my IT from your July 5th, 1968 Hollywood Bowl performance.
Oh, boy.
$4.50.
Yeah, so you still have that?
Yeah, I do, actually. Hey, you know, I OD'd on 100 hits of Microdot my sophomore year of high school, 73, and I've been analyzing this song, The End, and I need help. I say the snake, 7 miles, is the strand in North Island.
Well, you know what? I never really asked Jim what does this mean, what does that mean in his songs, you know, and because he wouldn't tell you anyway, you know. But you know, what he says is, you know, stuff like that should mean different things to different people, you know. And that's the cool thing about imagery like that is it does you can take it any which way. And some people will take it to mean one thing, and the other will say the opposite. And that's what's great about poetry like that.
Robbie, at what point did you and the rest of the members of the Doors pinch yourselves and go, we are the Doors? Did it ever hit you like that?
Oh, Lordy. Not really. You know, like I said, we always kind of thought of ourselves as being like an underground kind of group, you know.
Yeah.
We never really got at like the Rolling Stones or something like that, you know, in those days. You know, now I wish Jim would still be here.
The notoriety now is incredible.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Today it's like the Beatles, Stones, and the Doors.
Yeah,
you know?
Absolutely.
And Jim would have loved that because that's how he wanted it to be. And, you know, in those days it was really like, you know, who's the Doors, you know? I mean, we walked down the street, nobody really, you know, Jim, of course, would get recognized because of, you know, people saw him on Ed Sullivan and stuff. But, you know, we always thought of ourselves as being kind of underground and never quite breaking through, really, you know, and that's kind of how we liked it.
Let's go next to our East of the Rockies line. You're on Coast to Coast with us. Hi there.
Hi, George. How you doing?
I'm well. Thank you.
Okay. Robbie?
Yeah.
Okay. I have a fascination with palindromes, you know, with numerical palindromes and alphabetical palindromes. And I know Jim had a fascination with anagrams.
Right.
Right. In fact, he anagrammed his own name in a few songs. You got a story about his anagram?
Well, you know, the one you're talking about, L.A. Woman, Mr. Mojo Rising is, you know, which spells Jim Morrison if you mix the letters up. Now, there's a question as to who came up with that idea. You know, I think Jim did, but there's a gal named Patricia Keneally who if you saw the Doors movie, she was the witch.
She was the witch.
The witch.
Yeah, that sliced his wrist and shared blood.
Yeah, they had a black marriage. And she claims that she thought of that idea, which is possible. You never know. You know, but to me, you know, that was something that Jim would have done because, you know, he loved words and word games and stuff like that.
He liked her, didn't he?
Well, he did. He did. She was a writer at the time, and she interviewed him, you know, I'm not saying they actually got married or anything, but they did hang out.
What did he at that time think of the Vietnam War? During that period,
no, he couldn't stand it. You know, like all of us. You know, we all kind of, you know, we were all draft dodgers in those days, and you know, we just wanted to do anything we could to stop it. You know,
yeah,
and we thought that music was the best way. The only weapon we had, so that's all we could do.
You know, it's interesting now. As different from Vietnam, so many people chastise the young men and women who were troops then. And now, at least with the Iraq War, whether you're for this war or not, and most Americans are not, at least they respect the troops now, and they care about them.
Yeah. You know what? The Doors were probably the most favorite band of all the Vietnam guys.
Really?
Yeah, at the time and later. You know, I've done many benefits for the vets since then, and they all tell me that. They all said, cool. Man, if it wasn't for your music, we wouldn't have got through that thing, you know?
Yeah.
And, yeah, they really loved it.
I'm trying to think if Robin Williams played any of your music in the Good Morning Vietnam movie. Remember that?
Oh,
I think he might have. Yeah.
I think he did. Yeah, he did. And in fact, if you saw Apocalypse Now, you know,
yeah.
Coppola had the rights to use all of our music in that movie. Unfortunately, he only used a couple of things. But there's one thing that you can see if you get the version of Apocalypse Now that's out on DVD. There's a thing where they teach all these kids, Vietnamese kids, how to sing Light My Fire. It's very cool, very cool.
Do you remember that, Gary?
I know what he's talking about, yeah, from the...
Yeah,
the
if you movie. Get that the DVD...
I love that.
And check that out.
And West... The End became a major hit again.
To me, that was the most perfect marriage of film and music ever. You know, when I saw that for the first time, I was at the big Cinerama Dome here in L.A.
Yeah.
And on comes the screen, Apocalypse Now. First thing you hear is my guitar.
That's it.
Playing The End, right? And then there goes the helicopter going by, you know, and that blew my mind.
Rolling Stones magazine has you down as one of the legendary guitarists of all time. It's got to be a neat honor, huh?
That is. That's great.
Throwing in there with a group of people like Billy Gibbons and folks like that.
Uh-huh. Yeah. That is quite impressive, as well as I'm the number 22 on the golfers list, Rolling Stone golf of all time.
West of the Rockies, you're up with us. Hi there.
Hi, George.
Hey.
And hi, Robbie.
Hi, how you doing?
And where are you calling from?
Yuba City, California.
Okay, go ahead.
I was just wondering, whenever we were with Jim, did he ever talk about any, like, occult experiences or any of his Native American beliefs, or what was his belief?
He was very into peyote ceremonies. You know, He loved anything to do with Indians, Hopi Indians, all that kind of stuff, and that's why he wanted to experience the LSD and peyote, psilocybin. It's because of the whole deal with the shaman and the shaman would take the peyote and then he would lead the whole troop of people on a trip, and that's basically what he did on stage. Uh-huh. You know, he would lead the audience on this trip, and it was a very similar thing.
Okay, thank you for the call. Let's go next to our wild card line. You're on Coast to Coast with us. Hi there.
Hey, George.
Hi.
Bobby, how you doing?
Hey, pretty good.
Great. I wanted to ask you, by the way, this is Andy from Venice.
Right up the street.
I wanted to ask you if you had ever had any dreams with Jim. And if he'd ever, you know, if he, whether or not it was him, like, communicating something to you that you used in your life, or just a really cool dream that had Jim in it, living with you, like he'd been there all along.
I have Jim dreams every, you know, I would say once every couple months I'll have a Jim dream. And, you know, that's the only guy in my whole life I can say that I had that experience You know, I mean, he was such an influence on my life and everything. It's obvious why I still dream about.
Well, you know,
the dream is always that he's still here and we're still singing and
still up there.
Yeah, exactly. He never left.
Do you believe in the hereafter, Robbie?
I believe that it doesn't end, but you know, the only unfortunate part is that I also believe that you don't get to remember where you were before, so what good is that?
Unless we can give you some past life regression hypnotism.
Exactly, but I definitely think that it doesn't just, you know, that's it. It goes dark and the movie's over. I mean, what sense would that make?
Maybe there's a reincarnated Jim Morrison out there somewhere.
Oh, I'm sure I'll see him again at some point.
In another life or here?
Either or.
Maybe. Maybe.
I hope on a different planet, man. This one's screwed up too much.
He would have loved listening to this program tonight.
Oh, he might be.
Yeah, and he might be. Maybe he'll call in, huh? Wildcard line, you're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hello?
Yeah, hi. Take it away.
Hi, this is Paul from Fairfax, Virginia.
Hey, Paul.
I met someone who said he was Robbie's father many years ago, and he told a story about going into meetings with military generals. I guess he was a government worker or contractor, describing how weird it was with his son being a famous rock star and against the war and things like that. I was curious if Robbie could talk about that.
It could be true, Robbie. What do you think?
Well, it's possible, but, you know, by the time I was in the Doors, my dad had pretty much retired from that business, so I kind of doubt whether that guy was on the level. But my dad was an engineer. He designed jets and stuff and fighter planes. He was one of the designers of the first flying wing, and he's 90 years old a couple of days ago.
God love him.
Yeah.
Did you ever come across the Beach Boys living in Los Angeles?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I used to go surfing out at Malibu, and I'd run into...
Well, they came a little before you guys, right?
A little bit, yeah, a couple of years. In fact, yeah, I was in high school when I first heard them. And, we used to see them quite often around Hollywood. I would see Bruce out at Malibu, and Jim used to hang out with the drummer, Carl, I guess.
Carl Wilson.
Wilson,
yeah.
Yeah. In fact, one day, the two of them were driving down the street, and they pick up a hitchhiker. Guess who it was?
Who?
Charlie Manson.
No!
Yeah.
No. Oh, they should have thrown him over the edge. That's something. Gary, we're picking up stories like crazy, Gary.
Oh, we are. This is great stuff. And, you know, you can talk to Robbie. I mean, there's so many things you can ask him. I know that he was talking about some of the imagery in Doors songs. I've always liked the story of the blue bus. I think I asked Robbie that when we were talking on the phone. What do you think about the blue bus on the end?
Hold that, Robbie. We're going to take this break. How long do you want to hang with us tonight? What do you think? It's your choice.
Only about 12:30.
You got it. We'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM.